People living on the streets is a common issue across the region and across the country. In our region in particular, a housing shortage is a major part of the picture. City after city reports very low vacancy rates, meaning it's hard to find a place to live, and high rents are part of the picture, too. In Josephine County, county commissioners declared a housing emergency a few weeks ago in the hope of getting Oregon's governor to sign on to the emergency declaration and make it easier to address the situation. Meanwhile, in the city of Grants Pass, the Housing Advisory Committee is ramping up its efforts to create more housing to ease the crunch. We have two guests from the Housing Advisory Committee. Doug Walker is the committee chair and a developer himself. Hi, Doug.
Hi there.
Thanks for joining us. Sam Engel's with us as well. He's a member of the Housing Advisory Committee and works for All Care Health at his day job. Hi, Sam.
Morning.
Good to have you both here. So Grants Pass had a reputation for being somewhat more affordable than Medford. I mean, certainly more than Ashland. But Doug Walker, what's been the recent history?
I think that's probably either changed or we've caught up to Medford or maybe even surpassed it. I'm not sure that rents in Medford, but rents here have gone through the roof over the last few years.
Through the roof, I mean, do you have a percentage roughly? Or
No, I have no idea. I would say when I first got into rentals 20 years ago, they've probably more than doubled since then.
More than doubled, just in 20 years?
Yeah, wow. In 20 years, they've, more than doubled.
All right, so well over the rate of inflation, it sounds like.
Yeah, very much.
Sam Engel, tell us a little bit about the Housing Advisory Committee. It's not a new entity, right?
It's pretty new. It formally started in October.
Oh, really?
We started as an ad hoc group about 13 months ago, and it was a group of folks that were interested in housing as public health, housing as part of improving the community, and housing as economics, and then looking at how we could start addressing the issue just with kind of some group knowledge in the room.
Was it aimed primarily just at creating more housing? I mean, we're talking a numerical thing here, or is it more about quality, too, or some combination thereof?
Really both, and it's got to be at all levels to make a difference. You've got people who are on the street today who need to be somewhere that's warm and dry and safe and secure, and you've got folks that are marginally housed, but they're still going to work full-time, and they have kids in school, and they need to be in a house they can afford. And you've got other folks who would like to move into the area, work for local businesses, but they can't afford to come here, and there's nothing available if they could.
You mentioned housing as public health, which would seem to dovetail with your day job at All Care. Talk about that angle of things.
So there's a lot of, you'll hear people say that such and such begins at home. Good parenting begins at home, education begins at home, health begins at home, nutrition. And a lot of that is going to be defined by the quality of your home, right? And so if you don't have a place to live, you're barely able to hang on to the home that you do have, or the home that you have is in other ways substandard. It's going to affect all of these other aspects of your life. Adults keeping jobs, kids doing well in school, seniors being healthy. And that's something that we need to look at, really housing as health, as a vector for health.
Doug Walker, I want to come to you because you mentioned being involved as a developer with rental units in the Grants Pass area for about 20 years now. What are some of the obstacles from a developer's perspective, prevent new housing and reasonably priced new housing from getting built?
Well, we've begun a series of forums, or we're about to begin a series of forums to talk to developers to find out what their barriers are. Some of the barriers, some of the commonly known barriers, be land, the availability of land. We have in Grants Pass a small area footprint for the city. Zoning in county areas are very restrictive when it comes to multi-use family buildings. There are financial costs that in the past recession has restricted the availability of money to developers quite a bit, but I believe banks are starting to loosen up loosen up the purse strings on money.
All right, so all those things would lead to this. And what does either one of you know what the vacancy rate is at the moment in Grants Pass or in Greater Josephine County?
I think we're roughly 1%, maybe 2%. We're basically at zero.
Wow.
When there's a vacancy, there are people waiting at the door to get into it. I have people that they're just friends of tenants or friends of friends that are calling me or sending me messages and asking when I have another vacancy.
Wow. So you really get, I mean, no place sounds like stays vacant for more than a day or two.
Not if it's ready. I mean, there's places that are vacant because they're being painted or worked on or something, but there's no place that's vacant for very long.
We're talking about the Grants Pass City Housing Advisory Committee. Doug Walker is the chair and a developer himself. Sam Engel is a member of that committee, too. He is his day job is at All Care Health. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Talk about the things that can help improve the stock of housing numerically or qualitatively in your city. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Sam Engel, you mentioned this started as an ad hoc effort. Can you give us a little more history about the process of getting this advisory committee started?
Well, we started calling people who had a lot of knowledge on the subject. Tom Schauer with the City of Grants Pass has been a huge help in all of this, both advising what is possible in the city and what we might not know. Julie Schmelzer with the county has been really helpful as well.
She's the planning director, right?
She's the planning director. Mm-hmm. Doug Walker is a developer. And then other folks that are either on our staff or working in the community with the other CCOs who have knowledge of what people are experiencing with housing and the lack thereof. And then other employers who are looking at trying to recruit people and some of the stories that they're hearing from new hires.
Now, All Care, where you work, is a CCO, a coordinated care organization, therefore responsible for distributing the benefits of the Oregon Health Plan, correct?
Yes, sir.
So is it a fairly common issue, then, that among the people who are using the services of All Care Health, that there are some housing issues as well?
Yeah, and that's true in Grants Pass, but it's also true in the rest of our service area. And so while we're really focused on Grants Pass through this effort with the Housing Advisory Committee, we're also working in Jackson County. We've been working with Rogue Retreat and Hope Village. We're working in Curry County. and so that's something that we're hearing from folks really all throughout Southwest Oregon.
All right. So not an unusual thing to hear, no matter where you are. Doug Walker, you mentioned some forums coming up. Back up a little bit and talk about some of the things you talked about in your initial meetings of the Housing Advisory Committee, because I can just imagine that it seems like a very large and daunting problem, and how you begin to break it down into smaller chunks for beginning to deal with it.
Yeah, so we did. We started just going around the circle at the table in the beginning, like who's doing what, what's going on, is there some way this entity can help that entity, is there something happening out there that we can somehow grease the skids on and make it happen a little easier, a little better. Some of those things came up, and what seemed to come up as much as anything else were what we thought as a group were perceived misperceptions about what it means to be a landlord, what it means to develop, what it takes to develop something, what the city has done over the last 3 or 4 years to make it easier to develop. There's a lot of people out there that are developers or even the average person that doesn't know what's possible now that's changed over the last few years. And so one of the things we came up with was that there's a lot of, I don't know what the right term is, public relations or marketing or getting the information out that we need to do as a group. Or that the city needs to do, or whatever entity it is, needs to do to let people know what's possible and what they can do.
So is the greatest misperception then something along the lines of people don't realize that it's a little more difficult than they think it to be?
No, I think the greatest misperception is how difficult or how hard it is. This is my personal point of view.
Sure.
How hard it is to be a landlord. I find it very easy to be a landlord. I find it very profitable and very easy, and I think there's a lot of people that'll hear a horror story from one landlord and then apply that horror story to all tenants or all situations, and I think that's, for me, that's the biggest issue, is the average person saying, well, I'm not going to buy a duplex or have a duplex built because I don't want to be a landlord. It's too hard. And the reality is, for me, it's very easy, and it's a very good way of making a living.
Oh, so the fear factor dampens the market a bit, you're saying?
I think so. I think quite a bit.
And so what are some of the things you're able to tell people to lighten up that perception just a bit?
Well, I think one of the big issues is just explaining how a worst-case scenario would play out in the court systems in an eviction process. Somebody doesn't pay rent. If a landlord is timely and professional and they give notices as quickly as they can and they go to the court system, they process everything as quickly as possible, as quick as the courts allow them, worst case scenario is roughly 40 days to evict somebody who hasn't paid rent. And that's pretty fast when you're talking about kicking somebody out on the street. And most of the time, an eviction for not paying rent ends sooner than that because a tenant has to go to the court and explain why they should stay before there's a formal hearing. And so most evictions happen pretty quickly and promptly. But people don't hear those stories. They hear the horror stories from the landlord who was probably unprofessional and nice and giving somebody the benefit of the doubt for a couple months of not paying rent or something, and then started the process and then didn't know what the process was, so they ended up losing or ended up dragging it out for a couple months.
And so as you look around the city of Grants Pass and the possibilities here, I mean, are there lots of places where people could be, I don't know, turning a garage into a dwelling, that sort of thing?
Yeah, and yes, glad you brought that up. That's kind of one of the most exciting things the city of Grants Pass has done over the last couple of years. There's been a whole lot of zoning and density changes that are sort of esoteric and matter to developers, but not very much to the average person. But what the average person can do now is build a second unit on their house. And the city calls them accessory dwelling units, or ADUs for short, and they're basically an apartment. So now any house in Grants Pass can put a second unit on their property. There are limitations of where you can put it and how it fits and what you do here and there. I mean, those zone or code requirements are still applied, but a person is allowed to put a second unit on a property, which is a fantastic opportunity for people.
And so would the city change that recently?
Yeah, and I don't know the exact date on that. I think it was about a year and a half ago.
All right. We're talking about housing in Grants Pass with two members of the recently formed Housing Advisory Committee. Doug Walker is the chair of the committee. He's a developer. Sam Engel is with All Care Health. He's one of the members of the committee. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we explore what it takes to goose housing into a creation in any city, this one in case Grants Pass. 800-838-3760. If you'd like to join us by phone, by email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. We have an email from Mike in Medford who says, this is a great conversation to be having. It seems like municipalities are always waiting on developers to fix the housing problem, but they only participate in for-profit schemes. Why can't the city or county build housing? It seems most industrialized nations do this, as it's more practical than letting the market take care of all housing needs. Sam Engel, has that been explored at all?
You know, it has been. I think one of the strongest partners we have in the Rogue Valley for that is the Housing Authority of Jackson County. They're nonprofit. They partner very closely with municipalities and counties in the work that they do. Jason Elsey over there is part of the committee as well up here in Grants Pass.
All right, so the Housing Authority, but so that is public housing, you're saying, but not directly from the cities or counties.
No, yeah, it's a nonprofit third party that would be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not aware of city or counties, maybe in the more dense metropolitan areas where city or counties actually own property, but usually there's nonprofits like Sam said, the Housing Authority of Jackson County that come forward and get grants and raise money and develop properties and maintain them as at times, because of the grants, they maintain them as low-income properties or whatever the situation is for that particular development.
So, Doug, what are the plans for moving ahead? You mentioned forums for developers. I mean, what other sorts of things are you planning on doing with the Housing Advisory Committee to take this on the road and get people invested in creating more housing in Grants Pass?
Well, we are approaching the city council and city staff to see what ways we can streamline things, what barriers we can remove. We're going to have some forums with developers to try to figure out what barriers really exist, what barriers are just sort of perceived barriers. And there are a lot of developers out there who make their living developing single-family homes, and they're for a number of reasons, they're not going to switch over to multiplexes. It's not as profitable. It's not as quick of a profitable. It doesn't turn around as fast. Multiplexes are 20-year investments. They don't pay off for 10, 20 years. So there are people that can't do that or don't want to do that. So we have to get some forums going to find out from developers what are the real barriers out there stopping them from developing, what's stopping the average person from developing an accessory dwelling unit, a granny unit, a student apartment, whatever somebody wants to call it, and get information out there of what's possible, what can be done, what changes have been made at city zoning, city codes, and let people know about them.
That's interesting. So single-family homes are the bread and butter, then. You make the money on that.
Oh, yeah, most developers do, yeah. And I don't want to speak for large developers, and I haven't developed anything. I'm sort of retired, so I must have misspoke earlier when I told your staff who I was and everything. But most developers do single-family homes, and it's because it's quick turnaround. It's easy to do. There's lots of people buying them. The system is sort of geared up to build and develop single-family homes, and so that's what most people build.
So there's potentially an oversupply of single-family homes, although it doesn't seem like it by the prices in our region, but potentially and then always an undersupply of the multiple-family homes.
Well, I would say there's a serious undersupply of multiple family homes or workforce housing, As for single-family homes, I don't think there's an oversupply. We live in an area of the country where we have just an influx of people, constant influx of people, and that makes the supply of homes short at the moment. It'd probably be short for the next 50 years or so as people continue to move to the West Coast. And then we're still suffering from the whiplash effect of the recession from 15 years ago, 10 years ago. So I don't know what it takes to get developers to start shifting from single-family homes to multiple-family homes. We're going to try to work on that and figure it out. If it's just greater density zoning to make it happen so it's more profitable, or if it's just convincing them that they can do it and it's worth their while to invest in a fourplex so that 15 years from the time they build the fourplex, they can be almost retired or build a couple of them and do that. That's what happened to me. Somebody convinced me to build a fourplex, and I'm very, very worried about the whole thing, and my wife and I, my uncle really twisted our arms to convince us to build a fourplex, and then we did it, and we said, wow, this is pretty easy, and we already got positive cash flow, and 15 years from now, we'll own this place, and wow, let's do another one, and then it just opened our eyes.
So when you talk about the timeline, it really is just to get a loan paid off. That's the 15 to 20-year window?
Right, yeah, just get the loan paid off, and that's what our situation. If a person has money, has a cash to build it, then they don't need a loan, then they're profitable right out the bat. But if you're a young builder, which is what I was, I had to get a loan and pay the interest, and so I had a payment to make, and then once that was paid off, I was like, wow, okay, this is all profit now.
Sam Engel, I understand there are some changes in Oregon law that might help, things like inclusionary zoning. I mean, are there some things that might favor what you're doing right now in Grants Pass and make things a little easier for you?
Yeah. So part of it is things like changing to include inclusionary zoning around the state. I think that's going to probably roll out a little slower. But the changes in the ADU laws and some of the other things that Grants Pass specifically has done to shore up the code, that gives developers and homeowners tools that they can use to address the problem if they wanted to. ADUs are an option that homeowners can get into, and that actually potentially brings more revenue into the home, raises their property values as well, and creates an additional unit. We've got a deficit of about 2,000 affordable units in Grants Pass in Josephine County. And so in order to address that in a kind of a more timely way, you're going to have to come at it from a number of different angles. And ADUs, accessory dwelling units, that's one place where the homeowners can come in while they're waiting for, potentially larger multifamily complexes or more duplexes and townhouses to come in too.
Have you had any negative responses to what you're talking about here, particularly with the ADUs, the accessory dwelling units, where you've got people complaining because now the neighborhood's too crowded, anything like that?
No, we haven't had anyone say that to us. We've had very few ADUs built in the Grants Pass area since the rule changed. And one of the reasons is very few people knew the rule changed. And so that's part of our job to get that information out there. From seminar we went to up in Portland, there certainly has been a bit of that in Portland in areas where it's very dense already, and then suddenly there's allowed, ADUs are allowed and whatnot. So it can, I think, snowball. I don't think we're anywhere near that problem, but those problems do exist in some municipalities.
Let us take a call. We have Vajra in Sunny Valley on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to two members of the Grants Pass City Housing Advisory Committee, Doug Walker and Sam Engel. Hi, Vajra.
Yes, good morning. Hi.
Hi.
My concern is, you're speaking mainly, but you're speaking about Grants Pass. But also my concern is that we maintain the rural area nature of Southern Oregon here and not become an urban stream like we have from L.A. to San Diego. The other thing is this is all from the developer's viewpoint. There's been a lot of developing going on in Grants Pass. McDonald's and Burger King were torn down and raised up in the same location. There's been lots of building when we had nobody going into the buildings in Grants Pass. I'm wondering what's going on with the developers. That's just sort of a rhetorical question.
Mm-hmm.
And if the concern seems to be to suit the developers and not, where is the consciousness in Grants Pass to make multi-dwellings and duplexes and this sort of thing, even though it's not as lucrative for the developers?
All right. In other words, find ways to encourage people to put them in?
Yes, right, and concern for the actual people instead of just the developers making their money. It's all developer-oriented.
All right, thanks for that, Vajra. Doug, that seems to be aimed right at you.
Yeah, two things, two points to address there. the city, our city, Grants Pass, and the city of Medford, city of Ashland, city of Salem, all the cities, they sort of set their own rules for zoning and where things can get built. The construction itself has to follow state building codes. You have to have a bathroom here. You have to have this kind of a window. This is the insulation factors, that kind of thing. That's set by the state. Outside of city limits, in the county areas, that zoning is dictated by the state. So where she's talking about outside of city limits, zoning, density, overdevelopment, that's dictated by the state. Okay, so our area of influence doesn't reach outside of the city of Grants Pass. So we really can't do anything about those areas and whether it's going to be more dense or less dense. That's something else. As for consciousness of developers, most people I know are good people who care about others. And the reality is, you know, people aren't going to throw money away if it doesn't pay for something, you know, or if it doesn't pay back, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And so that's just the reality of where we live in. And there are entities out there that work hard to do things for the benefit of others, sort of Good Samaritan organizations and Good Samaritan people, and they're out there. But it's an unrealistic expectation to say, why aren't people doing something from the goodness of their heart? Well, they are. Maybe you don't see it, and maybe it doesn't relate to a 10-unit apartment building being built.
All right, so were either of you part of the, I think Grants Pass might have been part of the discussion about a year and a half ago about missing middle housing. Has that been part of the discussion here?
Yes, very much.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what are the steps then? I mean, we have about a minute left here, so just tell us what the next thing is going to happen is. When do the Housing Advisory Committee begin to hold these forums for the public?
Well, the first forum, although it's not ours, will be January 25th at AllCare in the evening at 5:30, January 25th. That's going to be on accessory dwelling units, what they are, what it takes to build them. Some people in the business are there to explain loans and whatnot. That's January 25th. And we haven't set dates for information gathering forums yet, but we will, and we'll be reaching out, conducting surveys with builders, try to figure out what the barriers are, try to figure out what the barriers are for people to get into units and everything. And some of those dates haven't been set yet. One of the unfortunate parts about being part of the City Housing Advisory Committee is we have to go through city meeting rules or state meeting rules.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. All that stuff is there. All right. Doug Walker and Sam Engel from the Grants Pass Housing Advisory Committee, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome.